You and I together kicking off a brand new week, Monday, July 22nd, 2024, on Connecticut Today, where we talked about the much-anticipated departure of President Joe Biden from the November White House race. We got further analysis on the race's reset from Sacred Heart University political science professor and scholar-in-residence Dr. Gary Rose. And finally, University of New Haven professor and State Department veteran Dr. Howard Stouffer talked about the international implications of a coming change in Washington. So look, if anybody is really surprised about what happened over the weekend, don't. And you know why? Now, look, kudos to Mr. Biden for finally realizing, you know, how old he was. It was time to step aside. But you know what really finally got to Joe Biden, literally, honestly? The money stopped. And I know everybody is letting loose with these flowery dissertations about how wonderful everybody is, and I get it, I understand it, it's how life is. You have to say certain things to make sure that, you know, all the T's are crossed and the I's dotted. But remember we told you, I think it was on Friday, it was on Thursday or Friday, that Kamala Harris was holding this emergency funding call with some deep-pocketed donors, and afterwards I'm reading on Saturday that the call basically was a disaster and they wanted Joe Biden out. Well, that's why he left. Now, obviously it finally got to him, but, you know, when the money goes, changes have to happen. In fact, there was a figure that just went up on the TV screen about a half an hour ago as I was prepping for the show today. That said, I think from the moment that Joe Biden exited the race over the weekend and that Kamala Harris became the heir apparent, and we'll talk about that coming up right here at 333-9422, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Something like $50 to $60 million had poured into the campaign because people, you know, I know people don't like it, but sometimes, yes, speech is connected to and akin to and connected with how much of a check you're going to write. So as much as so many people try to beat their breasts and say, oh, my God, the money influence in politics, oh, it's just too much, we have to go back to the days of more honesty. Well, no, that's not going to happen. What you have now are the days where deep-pocketed donors on both sides of the aisle, by the way. Don't think this doesn't happen to the Republicans either. But over the weekend, it rippled finally up to Joe Biden and the First Lady and Hunter Biden there when he put the crack pipe down. Oh, sorry. That the money was gone. There was nobody else that was going to write a check unless Joe Biden left. And he did, and he did the right thing. I think he should resign immediately, but that's just me. So finally, the message, and I understand Joe Biden's more than likely a very proud guy. He's been in D.C. for over 50 years. He was elected president. He probably thinks he should have been elected back in 2016, but they forced the guy to stand inside for Hillary. How did that work? And there you go. So we sit here today with a dynamic that is really interesting. And be careful how you view two different statements, two different words, two different angles of what a lot of Democrats are saying about Kamala Harris. Now, we're going to have weeks and weeks and weeks and actually a few months with all the weeks we have to break this down. But here's the difference that you have to understand here. Watch the people who say, I support Vice President Harris in her run to be the Democratic nominee, which, of course, is going to happen in a short and compressed timeline. So watch people who say, I support her versus I endorse her. There's a big difference there. Yes, there is a large difference. You can support somebody. Say, hey, he has my full support or she has my full support. Because that's kind of easy to give out, isn't it? I support a lot of different people in and about my life. You know, even if I don't agree with them, even if I don't think that a particular guy or gal that I know or surround myself with is the best person for the job. But because I have a relationship with that person, because I want to be courteous, I say I support them. That's a lot different to say, or when somebody says I endorse them. There's a big difference there. Now, for example, I'm looking at this story here. Governor Ned Lamont earlier on CNBC, and we'll get you this audio later on. He supports Kamala Harris. I got to make sure that is a support and not an endorse, but that's a big difference. Now, understand something. The people who say, and you're going to hear this all about, it's been bubbling up now since yesterday. There's a big difference when somebody says they endorse someone. It's probably because they have to. Now, I'm not saying they're not being genuine. I'm not saying they're not being, you know, genuine and honest and everything. But there are a lot of people in the Democratic Party who cannot say, and you know what the deal is here, because of the ethnic and racial composition of this. There's a lot of people who cannot say, well, I support the vice president. I support her running to possibly be the nominee. They can't. And there's a couple of things I'll read you later that the inference is already there. The cake's already in the oven. It's baking. If you don't support Kamala Harris and you're a Democrat, and if you don't endorse her, I should say full way through, and you're a Democrat, it's because of race. You're being a misogynist. You're being anti whatever her ethnicity is. Whether it's black or Asian or African-American or whatever, you cannot do that and stay within the good stead of the modern-day Democratic Party. Now, kudos to her. She served as vice president for over 3 years, so that gives her a leg up, if you will, as to her positioning here. But that doesn't mean that it should happen, nor will it happen, I don't think. I think if you're a Democrat, you're a fool to think this thing should be handed to her. And she gets that. She understands that. You heard her say something to the effect of in a statement over the weekend that she is going to earn the trust of people or try her hardest to attain the nomination. And that's kind of the right thing to say. You cannot act as if it is owed to you. But see, that's the problem now. You're starting to hear now, they're trying to quell this a little bit, but you're starting to hear by some folks, some independents, and also some people in the Democratic Party and who just are progressive and vote that way. Well, if you don't support Madam Vice President, there's something wrong with you. You're either a misogynist or a racist or some combination thereof. No, because when you come right down to it, I'll ask this question. And this should be asked of any politician going for any office and of any party, of any ethnic stripe, any sort of mode of life you come from. What have you done to deserve this? And I think there are a lot of people in Washington, in the Democratic Party, who say, hey, good on her for being VP, but does that automatically, and I'm not saying it doesn't in some way, shape, or form, but the question America is going to ask themselves is does that automatically qualify you to be president? Now, some people are going to say, well, what the heck did Donald Trump do before he was elected? That's a fair question. Well, he was on TV, he was a developer, some people loved him, a lot of people hated him, I get that. But my whole point in my opening here is just, pump the brakes just a little bit on this. And we're hearing the same thing that we heard with Hillary Clinton. Oh, it's time. It's historic. All the daughters and granddaughters and great-granddaughters out there, oh, they're going to be brought to tears like this. Oh, please stop. They said it way back in the day when, remember her, Geraldine Ferraro was the vice presidential nominee for Walter Fritz Mondale back in 84. Remember that? Oh, that was historic. That was going to make all the little girls cry and sob and joy. Well, whatever. Listen, if the Republicans had nominated Nikki Haley, she probably would be further ahead of Joe Biden than Donald Trump is, but I digress. So, again, I know it's going to be like this for the next couple of days, but the rubber's going to meet the road here, and there's a couple of indications that it's not going to be as smooth for the current vice president as some people want it to be, nor as some people think it should be. Because, again, the Trump campaign has already, and I've got some stuff they sent me early today, they're already going after her, both with facts, they say, and with a couple of television commercials that were already made. Now, I mean, obviously, you knew they had this in the can. Anybody who thought that the resignation of Mr. Biden would have thrown the Trump campaign off the kilter here is nuts. Now, having said that, I think it's much more harder for Donald Trump. So I think we have a really uber sort of entertaining weeks and months ahead. And we should. I hope the Democratic convention is a real convention. Let's do it the way they used to do with conventions, from the word convene, which means get together and decide something. Maybe it'll be Kamala Harris. Maybe it won't. There are already at least three men being rumored to be her vice presidential pick, so we'll talk about that coming up. Oh, man, this is going to be good. Get the peanuts, the popcorn, the pork rinds, the cashews, the chips and dip, whatever, because the next few months are going to be quite interesting. And joining me right now to talk about it, our buddy, our pal, Sacred Heart University political science professor and scholar in residence, Dr. Gary Rose. Gary, what an interesting world we live in, sir. How are you?
Good, Paul. Yeah, I'm surviving. I'm sure you are. But wow, what a week, huh?
This is writing. This is writing course material for you here, Gary, isn't it?
Yeah, it's time for another book. I know. But who knows how it's going to end?
Yeah,
it's
interesting, Gary. We're seeing, as I pointed out earlier in the show, there is a big difference, is there not, Gary, between supporting Kamala Harris and endorsing her? And I notice the words are being chosen carefully by certain people.
Yeah, well, you know, I think what they're trying to do now is they're announcing how much money has been coming in since you know, Biden was endorsing her, mm-hmm. and they're trying to scare away the people who are thinking about challenging her. But yeah, there's a big difference there between endorsing and supporting. And, you know, we do have the people that are in public office. They are openly now saying that they are endorsing her, as our own congressional delegation here in Connecticut says they're doing that. But, you know, it really comes down to the delegates, and are the delegates are not endorsing. Many delegates are now saying they're supporting, mm-hmm. but that does not necessarily mean that this is a done deal, because when they get to the convention, you know, the delegates were pledged to Biden, but that's over now. And so they really are free agents when they get there. And so who knows what these delegates are going to do? Some say they are endorsing her. Now, I understand that the Tennessee delegation is endorsing her, but yet there are other delegates out there that are saying they are supporting her. But that does not necessarily mean that if another candidate emerges at the convention, that they won't shift their support. So there is a difference there between endorsing and supporting. You're right.
So now, Gary, what do we look at here? Now, there's been all sorts of things floated here about, well, because the timeline is so relatively compressed, these candidate forms. And first of all, Gary, don't we have to find out who wants their name to be considered? Isn't that the next step? If not, everybody gets scared off by this?
Well, that's right. And if somebody is going to make a bid for the Democratic nomination, we have to know who that's going to be, like, immediately, because you can't just walk into the convention and declare yourself a candidate. You have to come in as a candidate. And at this point in time, nobody has stepped forward. And like I said, I think what they're trying to do, particularly by releasing these, you know, fundraising figures that came in the last 24 hours on behalf of Harrison, I really think that they're trying to scare everybody away and try to dissuade any type of challenge to her candidacy.
So is that money, Gary, is that necessarily pro Kamala Harris or is it anti Donald Trump? Because you could it could be interpreted that way as well.
Yeah, and you know, I've been asked that. Is this really a big outpouring of support for Kamala Harris? And the answer to that, I think, is a very mixed one. There are those, yes, who would like to see a woman of color, you know, elected as the next president of the United States, particularly, you know, that's particularly within the Democratic Party. You get that, perspective. But at the same time, there are people that are supporting Harris and giving money with the intention not because they're so enthusiastic over her, but because they want to defeat Trump. And you know, my response on this is anybody could have been named by Biden, and that person would still get the same amount of money that Kamala Harris is getting right now, because there is about 45-46% of the voters out there truly want to defeat Trump, and it almost doesn't matter who the Democratic candidate is. They will give money to the Democratic Party to defeat Donald Trump, because that's what's happening. They could have named anybody. Anybody could have been endorsed by Biden, and I think we would see the same energy level right now within that party too, because they want to defeat former President Trump. Yeah.
Dr. Gary Rose joining us as always, Sacred Heart University. And yet, Gary, you look at some of the polls out there, and again, they're all within the margin of error. I get that, but it's the swing states. And, you know, with all the baggage he has, Mr. Trump, remarkably and outrageously for some, at least half of the country, the guy still runs remarkably well. And if the election were held today, I can't believe I'm saying this, he would probably win. I mean, this race, Gary, every day you wake up in the morning, you say, really? And it's, it doesn't shift, at least not yet.
Yeah, he's at about 48% of the support right now. But that seems to be, quite frankly, kind of stagnant, you know. That's kind of a ceiling that he has. But nevertheless, as you say, he is certainly very capable of winning this election. And, you know, you mentioned the swing states. It's about 6-7 of those states. And within those states, you have a very small percentage of undecided voters. And so Trump could actually pull this off. And we could have history, you know, again, repeating itself, you know. And so, but, you know, I think that the debates are going to be key, and not just the presidential, but also the vice presidential debate. And who knows who J.D. Vance is going to be debating, but I think we're probably going to know that within a week or two. And so I think the debates are really going to be the determinative factors in this election.
Were you surprised, Gary, at the J.D. Vance selection? Was that, you know, Marco Rubio would have been safer, a lot of people say, but maybe J.D. Vance being a little bit unknown, did that surprise you or not?
Well, you know, he was on the list of on the short list, you know, as you mentioned, Rubio, Burgum and Vance, those were the top three contenders. So his name was always out there. And everyone knows that he has a very firm and close relationship with, Donald Trump Jr., who has been promoting his candidacy. And we do know that this election is going to probably be decided in the Rust Belt, as they say. And so here we have a senator from Ohio. So in that respect, it doesn't surprise me that much, because he does have quite an appeal to working class voters. And working class voters in Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin, too. You know, that I think is what's going to determine this election. So at first I was saying, wow, you know, he's kind of young and, you know, he's inexperienced, hasn't been a senator for long. But the more I think about the strategy here, it makes sense to me. And I think that Trump actually has a pretty viable running mate. And it was a pretty wise decision, quite frankly.
And when you listen to some of the things, Gary Rose, they said over the past, since he named J.D. Vance, the messages from both of them, and here you have a couple of Republicans of two different generations, actually a three-generation span, you know, railing against big business. And I'm asking myself, well, wait a minute, is this FDR or is this Trump? I mean, you talk about flipping convention on its ear here. Were you as surprised as I was to hear that?
Yes, I am. And this is a very different Republican Party now. This is not the country club Republican Party that, you know, many of us have remembered as, you know, like down in Fairfield County, you know, in Connecticut. So this is a very different, very nationalistic, pro-working class party, pro-protectionism, you know, which would involve tariffs, of course. And It's not the Wall Street Party any longer, and it's a very different populist working class party that appeals to a very different constituency than, say, you know, the Reagan and Bush era.
Yeah.
And so we're witnessing really it's a realigned Republican Party. It's a very strong party too. And we've witnessed a realignment within the Democratic Party, too, where a lot of those wealthy individuals, Wall Street type, have gravitated there. And so we're in a very, you know, tumultuous realigning period with the parties right now.
Finally, Gary, how do you, if you're the Democrats, if you're Kamala Harris, the money she inherits, the campaign apparatus, how do you balance the ticket? A lot of people looking at for possible VP candidates, some governors like Andy Beshear in Kentucky, Josh Shapiro in Pennsylvania, and I see even the former astronaut Mark Kelly in the Senate now being floated as somebody. So obviously, I think, Gary, you'd be looking at a balance here with gender, race, and even some ideology on some topics here?
Yeah, you have to come back to the center. If I was advising her, which I'm not, you would have to come back into the center with a running mate. And you've already ticked off a few of those possibilities. And let's also add Roy Cooper, you know, from North Carolina. And I think that those would be wise decisions. I do believe that she should have a male running mate, and who has a reputation as a centrist, and one who can, you know, generate votes among not just Democrats, but also independents and even moderate Republicans. And so the names that you just ticked off, you know, Kelly and Beshear and Shapiro, and I would add Cooper to that. I think those would be really good possibilities for her.
Wait, you mean to tell me you're not inside the campaign, Gary? You're not
no.
part of the kitchen cabinet, as they call them.
I'm
in
not the kitchen cabinet. No.
But listen, at least for the fall semester, there'll be the syllabus will write itself, won't it? Huh?
I know. I mean, I can't imagine what we're going to be talking about when classes begin next month.
All right.
A lot of great stuff here.
Yeah, those classes at Sacred Heart University. Dr. Gary Rose, political science professor and scholar in residence. Gary, thanks, and we'll talk to you down the road. Thank you, sir.
Okay, Paul.
As always, thanks, Dr. Gary Rose there. Yeah. Welcoming back this gentleman to the program, University of New Haven professor and State Department veteran, Dr. Howard Stouffer, on what is going on in D.C. and how other countries may see what's going on. Hey, Dr. Stouffer, it's Paul here at WICC. Good to have you back. How are you?
Thank you for having me. Glad to be back.
Well, it's good to have you back. Well, you've been watching this, as we have, and you know a lot of people in the international community. You've dealt with them. You know how they think. So, Dr. Stouffer, let's start with this before we go to the present-day stuff that's going around in the hot spots of the world. What do you think our enemies are thinking, our allies? Say it does come down to Donald Trump v. Kamala Harris. What do you think the thinking is in some capitals around the world?
Well, I think in the last 24 hours, there's a fundamental shift in the way foreign leaders around the world are thinking. Certainly, Putin in Russia was thinking, okay, I can get a deal with Trump and take what I want from Ukraine. That's all changed now, because if Harris wins, then she's going to continue supporting the Ukrainians. I think, you know, there have been congratulations coming in for Biden from all over Europe, from Canada. The Japanese and South Koreans know they have an alliance with the United States, and they've been circumspect, but still praising the president for his sacrifice. And even a country like Venezuela, where Maduro, president of Venezuela, not exactly a friendly country, praised the president for his sacrifice and his willingness to put country ahead of his own interests. So I think our enemies overseas are rethinking what they might have been thinking just a few days ago. Okay, this is going to be an easy opportunity for us. Now the entire equation is completely changed all over again.
What do you think Xi Jinping and his government in China is thinking right now, Doctor?
Well, the national newspaper basically did not quote what President Xi was thinking, but the national paper said, the United States is so unpredictable now because of the attempted assassination a week ago, and now the change of the presidency in terms of who's running for another term. They just say we have to sit back and watch what goes on. We cannot begin to predict what those Americans are up to.
And as you have told me before, Dr. Stouffer, and other people have who've been in your line of work, it's the predictability, right, that the diplomatic corps, the foreign leaders look at. It's like a baseball umpire, right? This guy's got a wide strike zone. That guy's got a narrow strike zone. All they look for is a reliable amount of predictability, correct?
Exactly. And now there's no predictability because, you know, what happened with Trump is one thing, and how Trump will react to the Harris campaign and her choice of a vice president will have a huge impact on, you know, how the polls are going to begin to show, what people are going to be thinking. I'm sure there's obviously consideration in the Democratic Party that having the first Asian woman and the first African-American woman as a presidential candidate will probably solidify a lot of the vote, the African-American vote that was apparently going towards Trump. And now this is changing. So, you know, the equations in all of the, you know, key states are changing. And it's too soon to figure out what's going on. But I think that there's no predictability at this point. Some polls may be able to show us in a week what's going on, but we really can't tell.
All right, let's go to the hot spots here now, Dr. Stouffer, that you and I have talked about over the past several months. First, you mentioned Ukraine and you mentioned Russia. Is there eventually going to have to be some sort of a deal here involving land? Because this can't go on forever for either side. What are you hearing on this?
Well, apparently Zelensky talked to President Trump just a couple of days ago, and apparently they had a positive conversation. I'm sure President Zelensky is now saying, you know, there might be a possibility of a deal where the Russians hold on to some territory in Crimea and in eastern Ukraine. But I can't tell you what he said, but I think he's going to have to show more flexibility if Trump becomes president than he would have shown if President Biden stayed in power or if, you know, Kamala Harris becomes president. That changes everything. But you're right. I mean, how long can this go on? The Germans have already said they've run out of ammunition and their payments to their own defense industry have been underpaying. So they really don't know what to do, you know, in terms of supporting Ukraine.
So was this Putin's long game, Dr. Stouffer, or was this just a waiting game? Because short of nuclear weapons, the Russian military, I think, has kind of been exposed here. It's not the growling bear that it once was, or not?
No, of course not. I mean, you know, there are some reports that have been released a few weeks ago that the Russians lost as many as 250,000 soldiers. That's not casualties. Those are deaths. And that the number of casualties is pretty high as well. Of course, the Ukrainians haven't suffered those kind of casualties, but they've been throwing in troops that are not trained and totally unprepared as conscripted troops into the front in Ukraine, and they've been paying dearly. And of course, finally, the $60 billion is starting to pay off for Ukraine, and equipment is starting to arrive. Long-range artillery is being allowed to be used in Russian areas, so it's having an impact. The Russian advance has stopped, and now the Ukrainians are probably going to try to consolidate and regain some territory they lost before.
To the Middle East, and we'll wrap up on that. Starts and stops here as far as some sort of a decent ceasefire between Israel and Hamas, but Israel is not holding back. They say they took out one of the major architects of October 7th the other day in that raid. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, the death of Mohammed Deir has not been confirmed yet by the Israelis or anybody else. So no one knows if he's escaped yet another attempt by the Israelis to take him out. But I agree with you that, you know, Netanyahu is coming here in 2 days and he will be speaking to the Congress, and he's going to be speaking with a president that is no longer lashed to the election outcome. Biden is going to be free to try to negotiate something and get Netanyahu to agree and to try to get Hamas to agree and see if there can be a release of the hostages, which is the number one thing, and a standstill, if not a ceasefire, in the fighting, and to see is there a way forward that will allow some kind of a provisional authority to be established that will be not Hamas and probably not the Palestinian Authority, and allow that territory to begin slowly to get enough food and then to begin building some housing for people that, you know, completely 80% or 90% of the population has been displaced from their homes.
And so we're looking, Dr. Stilfer, are we not, at something on a level, at least in some thinking, of almost a post-World War II rebuild type of rebuild for parts of Gaza?
Well, they say that that's going to cost, you know, $50, $60 billion, $100 billion. It won't be the United States, most likely Western countries that will pay. It will most likely be the Gulf states and Saudi Arabia that will be pouring in funds that have the money to do that. But they won't do that unless there's a stable regime. There's a possibility, there's a strong expectation that there'll be no further fighting, that there'll be no further outbreaks every 2 years, and that the conclave can be rebuilt and made a very pleasant place for people to live and to thrive and to flourish and to have their own government. And I think out of all of that, if that's done fairly quickly in a year or two, the idea of a Palestinian state will not be rejected as much as it is now by the Israeli people and be much more amenable to some kind of a Palestinian state that will be able to live side by side with Israel.
Yeah, and finally, Dr. Stilfer, I guess there has to be a constant hope that as generations come and go, just these hostilities, I mean, Palestinians and Arabs and Israelis, I guess the hope is eventually they all look at each other and say, this, right, this has to end at some point by the grace of God. We've got to all live together, right?
Well, you know, this has been going on since 1948 in the establishment of the State of Israel. Mm-hmm. And, of course, people forget that during the Ottoman period, Arabs and the Jews lived together rather favorably.
Yeah.
Not always perfectly, but for 400 years during the Ottoman Empire and before that, they lived for hundreds and hundreds of years together. So there's really no reason why this kind of conflict has to keep going on for goals that are unattainable. Israel's not going to disappear. Palestine's not going to be formed out of what is Israel today. So get realistic, and let's try to get leadership that'll accept that outcome.
Dr. Howard Stilfer, University of New Haven, always good analysis. Dr. Stilfer, thanks, and we'll chat down the road. Thank you, sir.
I look forward to it. Thank you, sir.
All right, Dr. Howard Stilfer there.